It's Lars. Thank you for checking out my podcast, and have a great day.
They will be met with fire and fury.
Broadcasting from Portland to Seattle and all of Oregon and Washington.
Ladies and gentlemen,
Lars. Now, Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It is Conspiracy Theory Thursday right here on the Radio Northwest Network. Glad to be with you and glad that we have more than 20 radio stations that carry this program to every corner of the Northwest, because we try to serve the whole Northwest with honestly provocative talk radio. And I can't help but launch off with a couple of opinions on Congressman Adam Smith. Yeah, the Democrat from the Seattle area, he has come up with something that is so loony that it even takes my mind for a moment off the groping of Franken, because you know that Franken is now accused of groping. That's Al Franken, the senator from Minnesota, who apparently groped a young lady while she was asleep, and the two of them were on a USO tour to, you know, provide a little entertainment for the troops, and Al Franken thought it would be funny to take a picture of Leanne Tweeden being groped by him while she was asleep. Now, a lot of people are starting to debate, well, his hands didn't actually touch her and blah, blah, blah. Look, he's a United States senator. We have now launched into a brand new national conversation about the appropriate behavior for senators, service members, members of Congress, movie producers, movie stars, comedians, the whole bit. And the conversation includes, don't go out and grope people who have not said that you are able to grope them. Do not go out and do this kind of stuff. And oh, by the way, don't date people your own age. At least when you're in your 30s, don't date high school girls. That's a bad idea as well. So it's Conspiracy Theory Thursday, but I have to start with Adam Smith, who apparently believes that the Pacific Northwest and the rest of America should be hit first with nuclear weapons, literally. And you know this is a possibility. That little crazy guy that runs North Korea, he's got missiles that can reach the Northwest. He's got nuclear weapons that he can put on the missiles. And Adam Smith has now introduced legislation. He introduced it yesterday that would say it is the policy of the United States to not use nuclear weapons first. Now, if you understand the theory of having nuclear weapons, it's mutually assured destruction. So if we have nukes and the Chinese have nukes, the Chinese don't hit us with nukes because we will hit them back with nukes. The Russians, the very same thing. The reason the Israelis have nukes is because they want to have some protection against people doing this kind of thing to them. So they say, you hit us, we will hit you back. But really what we're saying is, don't even start it, because we may have to use the weapons first if we believe we're about to be attacked. The United States is the only country on planet Earth that has ever used nuclear weapons in a war. The United States is the only country that has used them first. We didn't wait until the Germans developed nuclear weapons and hit us before we would hit them back. And in the case of the Japanese, we decided that using nuclear weapons at Hiroshima and Nagasaki would save at least 1 million lives, maybe as many as 2 million lives, and it was a good decision. Under Adam Smith's policy, we would not have been able to use nuclear weapons at Hiroshima and Nagasaki until the Japanese hit us first with nuclear weapons, which, thank goodness, they didn't have. And for the life of me, I can't understand why somebody like Adam Smith seems to think that we should announce to the world, go ahead, our nuclear weapons cannot be used by law until you hit us with nuclear weapons first. So I guess in Adam Smith's world, remember, this guy is a member of Congress, a Democrat from Bellevue, Washington, who apparently believes that Seattle or Portland or Spokane, because remember Spokane has Fairchild Air Force Base, or San Francisco or LA should be a smoking crater before the United States would be able to use that weapon. I think in some ways, the use of nuclear weapons or the presence of nuclear weapons is a lot like the police and the guns that they carry. Every single police officer out there who's on duty in the United States is carrying a gun. That man or woman is entitled or has the authority to use that gun if necessary. Do they or are they instructed to wait until the bad guy shoots them first before they shoot back? No, they're not. And if we change the rules that way, we understand that every time we see a police officer walking down the street of any city here in the Northwest, we know that that officer can pull that gun out. He or she can point the gun at somebody. He or she can fire a shot when the circumstances justify it. And that they do not have to wait until they have been shot at first before they can use their gun to stop something bad from happening. If we had that kind of rule for police officers saying, you can only shoot your gun once somebody has already shot at you, we would have a lot more dead civilians. We'd have a lot more dead cops. We'd have a lot more bad guys willing to use guns. Thank goodness we don't have this policy. But Adam Smith says he wants it to be the policy of the United States not to ever use nuclear weapons first. He says the measure could prevent catastrophic misjudgment. The United States should not use nuclear arms at a first strike. They are instruments of deterrence, and they should be treated as such. Well, it's not a very deterring weapon if the bad guys know you won't use it until you've been hit first. And let me give you a real scenario that could happen. North Korea, which has continued to be belligerent against the United States, against South Korea, against Japan, they've actually fired missiles right over the island nation of Japan. And that is a provocative move. It's equivalent to your neighbor firing a shot past your front door. It doesn't work. So if the little crazy man in North Korea decides, I'm going to go out in a blaze of glory, if he knows that he can launch nukes and that we can't hit back with something big enough and powerful enough to stop him until after he's already hit us, that puts the United States in an incredibly precarious position. I want my government to know that if they think that the time has come that North Korea is about to launch a strike on the United States, I want North Korea to know, and I want America to know, that we will hit them first if necessary to protect this country. Now, if you disagree with me, you're a naysayer, I'm glad to have you call in. That's how we work it here. It is Conspiracy Theory Thursday, and my conspiracy theory is that Adam Smith wants the North Koreans to hit us with nukes first before we're allowed to use them back, and he's actually proposed to make it law in the United States. Thankfully, he is not part of the majority party in this country. Glad to get your calls at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Our Twitter poll today found at Lars Larson Show and on the website, LarsLarson.com. By the way, brand new design website rolled out today. I think you're going to like the design. It's great for mobile. It's great for your phone. It's great for your pad. It's great for your desktop. Check it out at LarsLarson.com. Our Twitter poll question, should we let developers build apartments with no parking whatsoever provided for the tenants of that? We'll talk about that issue as well. And the Twitter poll is brought to you by Dan Jones Conveyor Trucks. Rock, gravel, sand, and topsoil. Let the Dan Jones trucks put it where you want it and save your aching back. Back in just a moment. Let's go to the nonsense next.
That makes a lot of sense. A lot of nonsense.
Right. You're bloody well right. You know you got a right to say.
This is the Northwest Nonsense, presented by the Ryan Group, where they guarantee to sell your house in 29 days or less, or they'll buy it. 29andgone.com.
How much longer do we have to sit for this nonsense?
No left-leaning, dead fish wrapper bias. No mega TV network liberal agenda. Just the cold, hard facts from Lars.
Got a bloody right to say.
In my book, the Bundys are a bunch of deadbeats. Yes, the Bundys, the folks who inspired an armed takeover of the wildlife refuge in eastern Oregon. The bunch that beat the federal charges for that escapade is now on trial in Las Vegas, Nevada. Yesterday in court, Ryan Bundy, who's acting as his own lawyer, stood up and declared, quote, "We don't pay for something we own." Now, to some conservatives, that kind of stance makes the Bundys land heroes. Not for me. Let's do a fact check. Thousands of ranchers lease federal land, especially here in the Northwest, and they pay their bills on time. Cliven Bundy, Ryan's daddy, did that for 40 years. He leased the land and he made his payments until he quit making the payments almost 25 years ago. By the time the feds showed up a couple of years ago to shoo his cows off the public lands that he was no longer paying leasing fees on, Cliven owned you and me, the American people, about $1 million. Like I said, he's a deadbeat. Now, Ryan wants to convince a jury that when he and his family steal from the public and don't pay their bills, they're justified in taking up arms when the bill collector comes to the door. I think he is absolutely wrong about that. From our Facebook page, The Lars Larson Show. Lars, if Seattle and other cities can declare themselves sanctuary cities for the purpose of harboring illegals, why can't Camas, Washington, declare itself to be a sanctuary from overbearing government regulations, signed Old Salt? He's talking about that paper mill that's being shut down in Camas as well. And now the grill.
Insane.
Are you completely insane?
Ridiculous.
They get more and more ridiculous.
Flat out dumb.
You're even dumber than I thought.
Who deserves today's Lars Grill of the Day?
Maybe they're just really, really stupid.
Find out right now. Brought to you by Arm Yourself Gun Store in Hillsboro. Proudly veteran owned and open 7 days a week. ArmYourselfStore.com.
I'm going to give today's Daily Grill to all the networks out there, ABC, NBC, CBS, the Chicken Noodle News Network, MSNBC, who have appropriately spent hours on the allegations against Judge Roy Moore, but they have spent zero time on the arrest and criminal charges against David Alcon. Now, if you wonder, why don't I recognize the name David Alcon? It's because the news isn't covering it. Alcon is running for Congress in the state of New Mexico, and last Friday, Alcon was charged with a felony for sending lewd and threatening messages to a woman. He has priors for this same kind of thing as well. But then remember, Judge Roy Moore is a Republican and David Alcon is a Democrat. Today's best email, but you can always send more to talk@LarsLarson.com. Lieutenant Colonel David Burkhardt, who's going to join us a bit later. Lars, I was in Mosul, Iraq in 2006 when Al Franken came up and did his USO show. I knew that he was trashing us soldiers on Air America Radio back at home, so I invited him out to the wire into the city to talk to the Iraqi people. Franken would have had full security around him the whole time. Franken said, "Oh, but hell no, not a chance." Now I understand he was too busy practicing his show backstage with Ms. Tweeden. Boy, you gotta love it. We'll talk to the Lieutenant Colonel a bit later on this hour, and you're listening to the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. Our Twitter poll today, should we let developers build apartment buildings without any parking whatsoever? This has come up as an issue in a lot of Northwest cities, including Portland, but now the latest one is Seattle. It's a project called Finney Ridge, and they're going to knock down some older buildings and build 55 what they call micro apartments. Here's the problem. Everybody in that neighborhood knows that when they build those apartments, as much as you think all those millennials are going to give up their automobiles and just go to riding the train and the bus and the other kinds of transit, that they're going to get around on their feet and on bicycles and Uber and Lyft, it's not going to happen. And everybody knows from living in these apartment buildings, this has happened in every city in the Northwest. They call these transit-oriented developments where they say, we're going to build 50 units and nobody lives in them is going to have a car. Dream on, folks. They're going to own a car. They're going to leave the car parked in a neighborhood. It's going to be parked in front of your house down the street. It's going to cause congestion. And yes, it's going to lower the quality of life. And that's why people are objecting to this, saying you can't let people keep jamming in more housing without parking to go with it. Now, we've also got the issue involving Adam Smith, the Democrat member of Congress from Bellevue, who thinks that we should let the Koreans or the Chinese or somebody else hit us with nukes first. I was surprised to get a naysayer, but in some ways gladdened to get naysayer Brandon, who apparently disagrees with me that allowing a first strike against America is a bad idea. Brandon, welcome to the program. What do we disagree about?
Hey, Lars, I listen to the show a lot. And
thank you.
I know it sounds crazy to disagree about this, but, you know, I'm active duty military. I'm a staff sergeant in the United States Army.
Thank you for your service.
I appreciate it, Lars. There's already policy in our doctrine that states our stance on, you know, biological, chemical, and, yes, nuclear warfare. And we already have those policies that no first use, you know, there needs to be an egregious offense in order to conduct nuclear operations like that.
Well, but, hold on. The policies that apply to you where you're serving in uniform, and again, thank you for your service in uniform, do not constrain the president. What Adam Smith apparently wants is a law on the books, and he's proposed a piece of legislation to do this that would legally constrain the United States and say the president can't launch a strike until we've been hit first. Now, right now, if Donald Trump got advice from his general saying North Korea has an intercontinental ballistic missile that has a nuke on top of it, and it's on its way to Tacoma or Seattle or Spokane or L.A. or Portland or wherever, he could launch a strike if his general said the right way to respond to this is to nuke that site and make sure they can't launch that missile at America. There's nothing in the law right now that says he can't do that. He's the commander-in-chief. Do you want to have a law in the books that tells any president, this president or any other one, you can't use that weapon to stop somebody from hitting us?
Oh, you already know the answer to that, Lars. I do not want that. But then to my second point,
yeah.
I feel like more or less, I know we probably don't got a lot of time, but I feel like it's more or less a good cop, bad cop thing where these congressmen, senators, and elected officials feel like they can't communicate with North Korea and they're stuck solely on the Trump administration and how they're going with communicating with North Korea.
Let me suggest something, Brandon. I get your point. But there are people who don't like Donald Trump's approach, but Donald Trump's approach seems to have gotten more out of China and more out of some other countries than any approach before that. And the last 25 years of our approach to North Korea has been, let's have talks with them and maybe we can talk them out of this. Well, 25 years ago when Clinton started the talks in the early 90s, they didn't have intercontinental ballistic missiles and they didn't have nuclear weapons. 25 years of talking later, they have nuclear weapons, and they have intercontinental ballistic missiles. So is the right way more talking? In other words, doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result? Or is the right way to try something else? Because North Korea is getting increasingly belligerent toward us in particular, and they now have the weapons that can reach us. So should we change their approach or stick to the old approach?
Definitely in favor of changing. I could see that making sense and be the only way forward. But, it's a tricky situation, Lars. That's definitely for sure.
Yeah, see, I just think it gets trickier if you end up telling the bad. See, this is what Trump has been doing from the beginning. He says, we're not going to tell the bad guys what we're going to do. They didn't tell Syria, we're going to whack one of your airfields. They didn't tell those 90 Taliban jokers buried in the monkey caves and spider caves under Afghanistan, we're going to flatten the caves on top of you. They just got flattened, and the airfield just got hit. So you don't want to tell the bad guys what you can do. Adam Smith wants to tell the bad guys, we promise we won't use our best weapons. You got the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. Glad to be with you and glad to take your phone calls and emails. We'll get back to those calls in a moment. But if you've listened to the show for a while, you know that I don't have much regard for Democratic U.S. Senator Al Franken. I don't like the guy. I don't like the way he won his office originally. I don't think he was funny toward the latter days of Saturday Night Live, and I think he's considerably less funny as a member of the United States Senate. But today, in an environment that includes Harvey Weinstein, in an environment that includes Roy Moore, in an environment that includes a lot of allegations being thrown back and forth by a lot of people, and some of them are legitimate, there's a Los Angeles radio news anchor who has accused Democratic Senator Al Franken of forcibly kissing her during a 2006 USO tour. She says she has accepted his apology, but he could have apologized earlier. Well, hey, he's a Democrat. He's not going to apologize till he gets caught, right? It took Bill Clinton 6 or 8 months to admit to the Monica Lewinsky thing. During a news conference today, Leanne Tweeden says she has no reason not to accept Franken's apology, and she acknowledged that people can make mistakes. She is not calling for an ethics investigation, but it is interesting that he mimicked groping her breasts in a picture that was taken while this young lady was asleep on one of the flights back from this USO tour. And I got an email this morning from Lieutenant Colonel Dave Burkhardt, who joins me now. Colonel, it's good to have you on the program. Thank you so much for your service to America in uniform. And you were actually over there in Iraq when Al Franken came to call, weren't you?
Good afternoon. Yes, I was. I was in 2006 and 2007. So he came over for a USO show and got a chance to chat with him a little bit.
And what was that experience like?
It was kind of bizarre. He came in, did the show, and the next morning he was going to fly out in the afternoon, but his plane was delayed because of sandstorms out of Baghdad. So in the morning at the DFAC, which is a dining facility, he was sitting by himself. And I knew who he was because I heard him on Air America with Randy Rhodes.
Yeah.
And he was making a whole bunch of disparaging comments about us soldiers doing bad stuff, you know, replacing the atrocities that the Iraqis did to each other, I think was his exact words, to us doing them now. So he was sitting by himself, and I sat down next to him, and I said, you know, I'm heading out of the wire. Your plane's delayed. And I want to take you with me to a place we call Iman, which is a patrol base. And I said, I can get you set up with IBA, and I have a squad, a PSD for you, along with a TERP. And you can go out, you'll ride with me, and you can ask the Iraqis anything you want. And along with the Iraqi soldiers, a coalition, it's just open game. There's not going to be a public affairs officer, nobody except us.
And by the way, when you say outside the wire, what are you describing, Colonel?
Well, we have FOBs. This happened to be FOB Merez.
And a FOB is a forward operating base, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. I'm sorry about the acronym.
No, I just want people who are hearing this to understand. I get what the acronyms mean, and I know what outside the wire is, but I want you to explain it so that everybody else understands. And the PSD would be a personal security detail, right?
Correct. It was a squad of soldiers. And this one had six. And their whole purpose would be to protect him. And so he said, is this in the red zone? Which red is the danger zone. It gets about as red as it gets. And he said, can we get shot at? And I said, we could. And he said, what about IEDs? And I said, that could happen as well. And he goes, I don't know. I'm not comfortable. I really don't want to get blown up or shot at. And I says, well, I don't either. I got a wife back home that's 7 months pregnant, and I'm not going to do anything to endanger me or you. But I said, here's an opportunity. You know, you trashed us on the radio, and I called him out on it. And I said, you trashed us on the radio, and then he immediately threw Randy Rhodes under the bus saying, well, it was her. And I said, well, you never chimed in to stop it. You just basically agreed with her. And so he stopped at that, and I says, it's going to be 4 hours. Your plane's delayed. I'll get you out, get you back in, and it's a great opportunity. So now you'll have a background on what's going on so you can talk about it. And he goes, nah, I'm not going to do it. Not a chance in hell. And I said, well, all right. And he said, he looked at me, and I shrugged my shoulders, and I picked up my M16 from the rack. And I says, if you trash us when I get back home, I'm going to make sure it's very well known, which he has. So the guy's he's a slimeball. And a lot of the people that worked with him on putting this USO show together kind of said the same thing. He's just kind of a slimy dude.
Well, see, and this is part of what bothers me about him as a senator, is that I don't think he's an honest guy. I don't think he got into the office honestly. The election that elected him in Minnesota wasn't honest, and I don't think he was an honest guy when he was in the private sector in my business, because the operation he worked for had scammed a bunch of money from the Boys and Girls Clubs one particular Boys and Girls Club that deals with some of the poorest kids in America in the Bronx, and yet he made a lot of money on it, and now he's a U.S. senator, and now we find out that while he was on this trip, he was apparently thought it was funny to, stick his tongue down a young lady's throat without her permission and to pretend to grab her breasts. and have a photo that was comedy. And it's funny because about a month ago now, he commented on the whole Roy Moore situation, the Harvey Weinstein situation. Moore hadn't happened yet, and he was saying, "Oh, it's just sad that it's happening. It's far too common." But he would have had a great opportunity to say that he was involved in that kind of thing as well, and he chose not to do it. And now there are literally some of his colleagues who are saying, "Well, he may have to be bumped out of the Senate, because if the standard is, even if you did stuff a decade ago or four decades ago, if it was despicable stuff, that you're not welcome in the Senate, it's going to be a little tough for the U.S. Senate to say, we're going to boot Roy Moore if he's elected by the people of Alabama, but we're not going to boot Al Franken."
Yeah, you know, and he was one of these guys that you sit down, maybe I was somewhat prejudiced, but when you sit down next to him, you get this vibe that he's just really a slimy guy. And one of my fellow officers that had walked out earlier from the DFAC, I said, "Why don't you come over and sit with me?" And he goes, "No, the guy is just a dirtbag." And I said, "Well," he said, "okay. Hey, I wanted to talk to him." And he goes, "Well, you're the only one." And that was about the end of the conversation.
Well, you offered him a great opportunity to be able to go out and see it with his own eyes, talk to people on the ground. And if he wanted to test the idea that American troops, American service members were committing atrocities, he could have, as you said, either talked to some of the soldiers and service members, or he could have talked to some of the Iraqis and asked them straight up, are you being treated appropriately by American service members and those who are trained by this? And he passed it up.
Absolutely. And it would have been just the Iraqis on the street. There was nobody put in front of them to talk to. He could have gone up to anybody. And, we were around to protect him, but he elected to come back again and talk trash about us soldiers and what we were doing.
Well, that's a sad situation, but I'm glad. Any other interaction with him before he left town, before he left the base?
No, fortunately not, but I just hope everybody knows this guy is just a creepy guy.
Well, Colonel, it's a pleasure to have, and since you've come back to civilian life, you're now retired. I've been calling you Colonel because you're a Lieutenant Colonel, and that was your rank. How's civilian life treating you?
Oh, it's great. I just love it. Involved in some veteran functions and associations, and doing well. It was 27 years in the military, and I thank my fellow soldiers for being there and everybody back at home for supporting us. And just don't forget, it takes a long time for these guys to adapt back. It was a rough road.
And it'd be nice to see them get some really great transition back into civilian life. Colonel, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you.
You bet. That's Lieutenant Colonel Dave Burkhardt about his experience one-on-one with Al Franken, who is now under fire because of a picture of him pretending to fondle the breasts of a young lady who was on a USO tour with him, and about her story about him forcing himself on her, at least his tongue down her throat, while they were on that USO tour, something she didn't like and something for which he's apparently apologized now that he's been caught out. You're listening to The Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to The Lars Larson Show. It is a pleasure to be with you live on the Radio Northwest Network. You know we cover Oregon, Washington, and Idaho. More than 20 stations that allow us to reach out to you, and you can reach right back on Conspiracy Theory Thursday. If you want to join the conversation, it's 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Emails go to talk@LarsLarson.com. Our Twitter poll, should we let developers build apartments without any parking at all? Seattle's dealing with the issue right now. Other Northwest cities have dealt with it. And we've had this question. A member of Congress, a Democrat from Bellevue, who's actually been on the program before and will invite him back, Adam Smith, says the United States should adopt a formal policy in law that the United States will never use nuclear weapons first. He is effectively saying, before we could use nuclear weapons, we have to wait until somebody hits us first. Should that be the policy? Stephen's on the line and is a naysayer, I take it. Stephen, do you and I disagree on this one?
Yes, we do. Not for the reasons that Mr. Smith has come forward with, but being a pragmatist and a realist, I don't believe this country is united enough to weather a preemptive strike. And I'd like to cite as my one example, and I'll turn it over to you. 9/11. Can you imagine if George Bush Jr. came on television the evening of 9/11 and said the CIA just prevented a terrorist attack from Al-Qaeda in which operatives would have commandeered commercial airlines and flown them into the Twin Towers. But they prevented it, and the operatives are arrested, and right now I'm declaring war on Afghanistan. How do you think that would have been received had the terrorist plot been foiled?
Well,
I think the country, there would have been a good amount of this country
except that we haven't handled that way. We have stopped a great many. You added on the element of going to war in Afghanistan, but the war in Afghanistan was justified, predicated on the idea that we had been hit and we were going after the people who hit us. If we managed to stop the attack, you know that both during Bush's tenure in office and during Obama's, there were plots to attack the United States that were stopped. In fact, we may not even know all of them publicly right now, but we know that there were at least dozens, maybe hundreds of plots to attack the United States in various ways that were stopped, and we didn't declare war on the countries that those people were from. So I think you've added an element in there. Let me go back at it since you made your point. You tell me this.
Yes.
You would agree with Adam Smith's proposal to say that the United States will announce to the world, we will never use nukes first. We will let somebody else hit us before we would ever use a nuclear weapon. You would agree with that?
Unfortunately, yes, I would.
Well,
for the reason stated.
But hold on. If the day comes that an American president has to launch a nuclear strike on a country, you can better believe that he's going to offer up some kind of explanation, either right before or right after, probably right after. This is why I hit these people. If you think about why Reagan hit Libya after the attacks that Libya helped to engineer in Europe, and this is going back 30 years, Reagan's famous speech, it's 5 minutes long, it's well worth watching, it's available on YouTube, where he explains, we have tried everything else to respond to this, and this is our only ability. You know, the bombing of Libya is happening right now. That if Donald Trump or any other president thought that America was going to be hit by a strike, should we hit those people first? And you're telling me you would say, nope, sit back, wait till they hit us, and then hit them in response. That's what you're telling me.
Yes, because I think the nuclear exchange is serious enough to warrant it. I believe that the opposition could very well try a coup, or there would be some kind of
what opposition?
War.
What a Korean opposition?
Trump's them. What's that?
You're telling me that you're worried about a political coup here because an American president. So let me take you back to a well-known attack. All right. Tojo is steaming toward Pearl Harbor. You find out 24 hours ahead of time that he's going to hit Pearl Harbor and sink an awful lot of our Pacific fleet. You would let them hit us first and then respond second, right?
Well, if the end objective is to get America into the war, yes.
I'm not. The end objective is to protect the country. If you knew that there was something that was a proximate danger. See, I compare this to a police officer with his gun. Do you expect a police officer to wait until he's been shot at before he shoots with his gun?
No, on that particular instance, no, but I think there's a big difference.
Well, the difference, but let me tell you why I'm making the comparison. A police officer may size up a situation and say, in this situation, I need to act now to stop whatever harm I can stop before the bad guy sticks a knife in somebody, before the bad guy shoots. Now, police officers use a lot of discretion in a situation like that. They will oftentimes let a bad guy get away with a lot until he becomes enough of a danger that the officer says he's going to shoot. You would never have a policy that said the officer must be shot at first or somebody must be shot at first before the officer can use his gun. And yet you're going to tie the hands of the whole country and say you have to wait till somebody hits America first with an attack before we use weapons that might stop that attack?
Well, here again, the weapons are nuclear. It's okay, you know, with using the example of the police officer, it's only okay if society accepts it. And I think in the case of a nuclear exchange, there's going to be a good portion of this society that is not going to accept.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. Talk about a target-rich environment. You've got Roy Moore, who is pushing back vigorously in the Alabama U.S. Senate race. You've got Bob Menendez, the Democrat, the corrupt Democrat from New Jersey, a mistrial in his case. And based on his comments after the jury left, it's almost as though the guy thinks that they cleared him, that they actually acquitted him. They did not. They merely had a mistrial, which means he'll probably have to be tried again. But it'll give the Democrats a little bit of relief. You've got Al Franken accused of sexual misdeeds. I mean, groping a woman's breasts and only apologizing for it after he got caught doing it. And so that's on the agenda. Adam Smith, the Democrat member of Congress from Bellevue, who is suggesting that we should let another country. He didn't name a country in particular, but it could be North Korea, could be China, could be, Iran someday, could be Russia. That hits us first with nuclear weapons, but he wants us to adopt a law. He introduced a bill yesterday that says it is the policy of the United States to not use nuclear weapons first. So in that terrible occasion, when the United States is so threatened that an American president might be inclined to use a nuclear weapon to stop an attack against the United States, he would be held back by Adam Smith's law. If anybody was crazy enough to vote for this nonsense from Adam Smith that says, no, they have to be allowed to hit us first before we can hit them. And our Twitter poll today that has to do with a Seattle project, should we let developers build apartments without any parking whatsoever? The one in particular in this case is Finney Ridge, but it doesn't matter. A developer wants to build 55 apartment units and not supply any parking for the tenants at all because the foolish crowd that runs the planning departments of places like the city of Portland, city of Seattle, city of Spokane, city of Eugene, seem to think they can build housing with no parking and that everybody who lives in the housing will simply forgo an automobile, that they'll get around by foot or on a bicycle or on transit. And what they do in practicality is they go ahead and they buy a car anyway and they park it in the neighborhood in front of somebody else's house. And it creates problems there as well. Let's go to Joe in Seattle, who's listening on Talk Radio 570 KVI. Hey, Joe, welcome to the Radio Northwest Network and the Lars Larson Show. What's on your mind?
Well, I guess you could say, Lars, first, how you doing? I'd like to second your comment about the crazy people running Seattle. I agree with you 100%.
Thank you.
And I hope you're well.
I am well. I'm very well.
I'd like to say I'm the naysayer to that last naysayer about this Adam Smith ridiculous law. I just want to know if he is so strong in his convictions, if he's willing to pony up his city and any city within a nuclear strike radius to be the target that they hit first.
I think he's effectively done that, hasn't he, Joe? Because remember, when you take a look at the globe, other than Anchorage, Alaska, one of the closest possible targets for North Korea in that great circle route is going to be Seattle-Tacoma, isn't it?
Yes, sir, and like you, my friend, I got a dog in that fight, and that dog's got puppies, and I ain't too keen on nobody hitting me first. I think we need to get the drop on him, get the object of surprise, and then let him naysay himself in the afterlife.
I think that's a good idea, Joe. Thank you very much, and I appreciate the call. Let's go to Ricky. Hey, Ricky, welcome to the Lars Larson Show, and thanks for listening to our flagship FM News 101 KXL. What's on your mind?
It's Conspiracy Theory Thursday.
It is.
And you're basically involved in a conspiracy. Number one, this tax thing is a scam. And I would like to know who paid for you to go to Washington, D.C., I think it was last week, to sell this thing.
Okay, hold up. Are you going to engage in a conversation, Theodore?
Theodore? Here's the deal.
Theodore, hold up. I will tell you who paid for it. I paid for it. I pulled my Amex card.
I don't believe it. I don't believe it. But this is the deal.
Who do you think? Hold on. If you've got a theory on who paid for it, you tell me who paid for it.
Yeah, you turn me on and off.
No, tell me. I don't turn. You don't turn me on at all. And I'm hoping that I don't turn you on. So tell me who you think paid for the trip.
These rich Republicans who you represent and commiserate with want to rip this country off. They want to loot the 401ks. This whole tax thing.
They took the 401k business out of the bill, by the way, Theodore.
It's nothing but giveaways to the S&P 500, the top 500 to maybe 1,000 corporations in the country, and to the richest maybe 5%.
By the way, Theodore, if you're not going to engage in a conversation, Theodore, stop for a second.
There's nothing for the working man.
Okay, you know what, Theodore? You're pushing it, and you're going to get banned. You know that's how it works when you don't engage in a conversation. Okay, that's it. He's banned. He's gone again. That's it. I'm just not going to do it anymore. I'll tell you what I think. I think that the best folks who have evaluated the tax plans in both the House and the Senate cases, and I've got that chart that I'm glad to send anybody who wants it, that shows that everybody gets a tax break out of this. In fact, there will be some upper income people who will see a little bit of an increase in some areas and a decrease in other areas. But the average family that's now paying $10,000 or $12,000 in taxes would see a drop of about $1,200. That's about a 10% decrease. Now, Theodore doesn't want to debate that. He doesn't like me asking those questions because he knows I'm going to say, tell me the person who's going to pay more under this, and he isn't going to be able to do it. But, you know, if you don't have the facts on your side, you have to, you know, baffle your way through with BS. Let's go to David in Seattle. David, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. What's on your mind?
Yeah, how are you? I was just calling.
Quite well.
I've been listening to you for the last couple of months, and my question for you is, it seems like there's a very uneven response to your, or at least for your opinion on sexual harassment and some of the issues that are coming up. And you know,
how so?
Well, I mean, you, Franken has allegations that came out today. And I would call your
response. There's a picture, and he acknowledges that he apparently did what he's accused of doing. Louis C.K. is another guy who basically came out and said, I did.
I'm in no way disputing that Franken might have done something wrong here.
Right.
I'm talking about your response to these allegations. 2 days ago, I heard you say on the air with Roy Moore, after he'd been accused 5 or 6 times, that this was character assassination.
No, actually, hold up.
I heard that.
David, hold up. I did not use that term. I did not.
Absolutely, you did.
No, I did not. Listen, I'm telling you, I've used that term in other cases, but in this case, I didn't call it that. I've said, in fact, would you like to, I mean, I've got the commentaries right in front of me that I've done the last couple of days on this subject. All right. Would you like
to
hear? Here's yesterday.
No,
I don't think you did because it doesn't say what you said. Listen, I said the official story of Judge.
No, this was Tuesday, so you can skip yesterday.
Oh, so you don't want to go.
Your opinion on this has also evolved over the last couple
Well,
of days
it's
well.
Only evolved because the information has evolved. And by the way, I will promise you that every time a subject evolves or the information evolves, my opinion will evolve as well. Why shouldn't it? I mean, if I was a guy who said, I believe something on Monday, and if there's new data on Tuesday, I'm not changing my mind, I'd be an idiot, wouldn't I?
Yeah, so why after 16 accusers has your opinion not evolved on our commander-in-chief?
Well, because most of those accusers went away conveniently the minute the election was done because some of them were real, probably. Some of them were fake.
So you're admitting on the air right now that some of Trump's accusers were real.
Some may have been real. I've said that before. But we will never know because there will be no mechanism to sort out whether they're real or not. For instance, Bob Menendez is accused of being corrupt. There is a trial that was supposed to resolve that. It hung. It went to mistrial. We don't know. If they bring the charges again and they try the case again, we may get a resolution. Tell me where the mechanism is to ever resolve whether the charges against Roy Moore are true or not. Tell me where the mechanism is to resolve whether the charges against Donald Trump are true or not. Tell me where that happens.
I'll go right back around to you.
No, you're going to answer my question first.
You just spoke. Let me finish for a second.
I want you to answer my question first. Where is the mechanism for anybody to be able to find out if the charges are true? Tell me the answer
Absolutely.
To my question first.
It is absolutely difficult to determine whether these charges are true or not.
Impossible. Not difficult. Not difficult. Impossible. Right?
But you have Franken signed judge, jury, and executioner.
There's a photo of... Hold on, David. There's a photo of Al... There's a photo...
That is not what you looked at.
Al, there's... Hey, there, David, there's a photo of Franken doing it, and he acknowledged that he did it, and he has apologized for doing it, right?
Come on, absolutely.
Well,
yeah,
then why shouldn't I? Well, then why is it wrong to draw a conclusion?
There's also a yearbook with Roy Moore, and there's also.
Now, what does the yearbook prove?
Presidential
Hold on, David. What does the yearbook prove?
Let's back up for a second.
No, hold on, David. I sign things for people probably 50 times a month. I have people ask me to sign a photo or a book, all kinds of things. I sign photographs for people on occasion if they ask me to. Does the fact that somebody has a photograph that I've signed prove anything more than that I learned how to sign my name?
Listen, I love how you love to do this.
I'm asking you, what does that yearbook prove? David, I'm going to keep at this for another minute, and then I have to break because of a commercial break. But tell me this. What does a signed yearbook prove?
It proves a pattern of interaction with young girls.
Hold on. David, I'm going to make this simple. I know you're a simple guy. I can tell it in your voice.
Absolutely.
Are you not a simple guy? Are you a complicated guy?
No, I'm an intelligent guy.
Okay, then I said you're a simple guy.
Issue by issue.
Took it the wrong way. I was saying it was kind of a compliment that you're a simple guy. I'm a simple guy, too. If you find a signature where I have signed a yearbook, where is the most likely place for Lars Larson to sign a yearbook?
Oh, come on.
No, I'm asking, where is it? Would it be on the moon? Would it be a shopping mall? Would it be on a military base? Where is the most likely place that I might be asked to sign a yearbook?
On a page in the yearbook in a public setting. Give me a break.
In a high school, right? I mean, I don't know about you. I didn't carry my yearbook around with me.
You're making giant leaps to get him out of trouble.
No, I'm not trying to get him out of trouble because, as you know, I've taken the position that his candidacy is incredibly problematic, that we will never know one way or another, and we do know that he has refused to definitively say he didn't date teenagers, and that is, for most of us, despicable behavior for a 30-year-old. And we've had long discussions about this for the last couple of days. So when you say I'm trying to get him out of trouble, but you're trying to say that the fact that somebody signed a yearbook proves that he molested girls.
No, don't put words in my mouth. That is absolutely
not
what
I ask you. What does the yearbook? David, I'm going to ask David to be quiet. David, tell me what signing a yearbook proves. You said, well, he signed the yearbook. Tell me what that proves.
No, you want to change the subject.
No, you brought the yearbook up, buddy, not me. You brought it up, not me. Listen, I'm up against a break, folks. I wish I could get somewhere, but David brings things up, and then when you say, well, what does that mean? He says, well, I don't want to talk about it. Well, then don't bring it up. I don't bring up things I don't want to talk about. You're listening to The Lars Larson Show. The Lars Larson Show. Glad to be with you and glad to take your phone calls and emails on this Conspiracy Theory Thursday. Just remember, if you're going to be a naysayer, I'm glad to take naysayers, but I want you to be able to, ask a question to me. I'll answer it. Then I get to ask a question of you, and you don't get to dodge the answer. Unfortunately, too many people try to do that. We've got so many things going on right now. I did want to mention this. There is a moment that absolutely sums up Portlandia in a way that nothing else can. Because, as you know, Portlandia, the series, is actually a documentary series and not it's not a fictional document at all. It's actually real because this is the way that Portland actually works.
Let's face it. We've all heard this.
Get out of the bike lane!
Or,
hey, can't you see the green color on the street?
And, of course, the inevitable slap of the fist on the trunk of your car.
Bicycle, bicycle.
With today's bicycle story of the day, here's Lars Larson.
Oh, the bicycle story of the day. It involves the mayor of Portland, Ted Wheeler, who has been on this show. Let's see, we've had him twice this year. Maybe we'll get him once or twice next year as well. I can see why he's not that anxious to talk about some of the issues, like the fact that businesses are moving out of his town because he's allowed some of the street people to become so obnoxious and so dangerous that even major companies like Columbia Sportswear, Sorel Boots, and now a local jeweler have all said, we're out of here. We're getting out of here. This place is too dangerous. Consider this. This is Ted Wheeler. Apparently, he left yesterday to go all the way from downtown Portland to Hillsboro for a forum where people are going to ask questions. It's a drive of, 20 miles or so. Wheeler arrived via Lyft after the city car he was in ran out of electricity. If you have an electric car, you know, most of them have a range of at least 100 miles, maybe a couple hundred miles in some cases. They ran out of juice halfway there. He informed the audience that if he seemed out of breath or a little loopy, it's because he was on pain medication after he broke multiple ribs in a biking accident on Sunday. If I declared I want to run for re-election today, it is totally the drugs. Now, if that doesn't sum up Portland and its leadership right now, I don't know what does. Let's go to Josh. Hey, Josh is on the line in Vancouver. Josh, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
What's going on, Lars? You know, it is absolutely a pleasure to talk to you every single time I call in.
Thank you.
I don't know why you don't have an aneurysm yet because of all of the amazing callers.
This is fun. I have fun doing this.
You know, I've started listening to you probably about 8-9 months ago, and I haven't stopped.
Well, thank you.
It's amazing. Real short, quick. So I make about 32 to maybe 38,000 a year. Single family, two kids, little kids, wife's a homemaker and stuff. So the new tax break, everything that we're talking about,
How
does that and will that benefit me?
I believe that it will. And I've looked at some of the charts that have, and in fact, I've offered one up. I put it on my Facebook page. It's a chart that shows various different scenarios, and everybody is going to be different. It's how much you make, how big your family is, how many kids you have, you know, what your deductions are, where your income comes from, whether it's, you know, what they call pass-through income or whether it's, you know, W-2 income. You know, so all those things will change everybody's circumstances. But this should be a tax cut for everybody in America. And I think it's going to be a good change. It's also a cut for corporations. And by the way, you got to remind your friends who say, well, those corporations are getting a cut. Where do you think you buy your gasoline, your groceries, your rent, you know, your utilities? They're paid to you. So if the corporation's taxes go down, you know the corporations don't pay taxes. Their customers pay the taxes. So I believe that it's – Josh, I got to ask you to hold on for a second. I believe that it'll do that. We'll be back in a moment. You've got the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you. I'll get back to your phone calls and emails shortly at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Emails go to talk at LarsLarson.com. But right now, Dr. Samuel Metz has agreed to join me, and he's suffering from the flu at home, but he said he would soldier on, and I'm going to resist the urge to say, physician, heal thyself, and just say thank you, Dr. Metz, for coming on the program to talk about addiction problems.
Thank you very much, Lars. I'm going to take my mother's advice and get plenty of rest.
I think that's capital advice, you know, drink lots of fluids and all that. But tell me this. You were part of a panel that put together a look at the addiction problem. This focused especially or specifically on the state of Oregon. But at the very beginning, you say Oregon's addiction crisis exceeds that of almost every other state. 2 out of 3 Oregonians suffer from addiction or know somebody who does. Those two sentences are stunners.
They are. This is a problem that is no longer someone else's problem. This is not something that we can say other people suffer from. Alcoholism, opioids, cocaine, these are all about us, and we've ignored it for too long, and it will destroy us unless we take action now.
Now, when you looked at addiction, were you looking just at the hard drugs, the heroines, and just at the opioids, or were you including methamphetamine and cocaine and others like that?
We were including all of the illicit drugs, but what came to our attention very early on is that alcohol is half of all of the alcohol-related cost, morbidity, and mortality across our state. It's by far the most severe substance use disorder here in Oregon.
So this does include alcohol as well, although I can imagine that between opioids and alcohol, if opioids depress your breathing and alcohol accentuates that, the combination is probably especially deadly.
Correct. And addiction, substance use disorder, doesn't really discriminate. People who have this chronic medical condition will seek out drugs of any kind. And as a matter of fact, most of the people who suffer from a substance use disorder are taking multiple drugs. They don't exist in isolation. They're all the manifestation of really a single huge disorder.
So in other words, you know, when we've talked to the cops before about what they call poly drug use, I think they said 60% of the people stopped for DUI driving under the influence aren't using a single drug. You're not likely to find that kind of purity that, oh, officer, I was only, you know, smoking pot, I was only drinking, I was only, you know, taking this, that you're seeing many people who are taking two or three different things that all interact on them differently.
That's correct. They all come from, an intersection that could affect everyone, including homelessness, mental illness, institutionalized racism, our criminal justice system, physician practice, childhood stress and trauma. Addiction is the final common pathway of so many social failings, and the people who fall into this category don't discriminate amongst the drugs.
So,
they will find the drugs that take care of this inner urge and this failing.
So, Doc, what's the best way to get at this? I've had people in the last few weeks when we've been discussing it a lot more than I think we ever have over the last 20 years of this show. I've had people say, well, Suboxone is a technique that we're not using enough, and that there are other things that are being used elsewhere in Europe and in other countries that have worked very well to get people off these drugs. But are we using all the skills and techniques that we could be using? And if we're not, did you get some sense of why we're not?
You're correct. We are not addressing this problem. The Suboxone is a way to specifically treat people who already have substance use disorder involving opioids. But the most cost-effective interventions for us isn't to wait for people to get the disease, express the disease, and then do harm to themselves and society, and then decide to take action. The best place to intervene is to prevent substance use disorder in the first place by relieving all of the social problems, the family problems that drive people to seek out addictive drugs in the first place. We go through a variety of different interventions at all levels, including the one you mentioned, Suboxone.
Yeah.
Which is very valuable in helping many people with opioid substance use disorder.
But how do you get to those things? Because, Doc, I mean, I'd like to solve all the social ills of the world or America or my community if I could as well. I'm just not sure how you go about that because I'm not declaring it impossible, but I'm saying it's problematic, it's tough. And it may require that we, I guess, put some pressures on people not to behave that way. I mean, I've made suggestions myself, you know, drug testing, you know, for access to certain things, you know, whether it's welfare or food stamps or whether it's the paycheck you get. And yet none of those things society seems willing to fully embrace.
I think you're addressing two issues. The first is there's no single intervention that will cure everything.
Right.
But there are multiple interventions, all of which have the potential to improve this epidemic, to help relieve it, to help prevent it, to help people who are suffering to get some relief. The idea, though, that this is a choice that people make is wrong. Substance use disorder is not a moral failing. It is not a character flaw any more than diabetes, hypertension, or coronary artery disease is. And in fact, it can be produced by homelessness. It can be produced by trauma and stress of any kind. There are people who are genetically programmed to seek out addictive substances who have far more problems than people who don't have that genetic makeup against them. The idea of, however, of saying, just say no, is is not effective. And in fact, the most cost-effective interventions we have for substance use disorder occur in school, in elementary school, before kids are even exposed to drugs. And it's not a just say no. It's creating programs in schools that promote the social skills, the ways to deal with stress that kids need so that when they're first exposed to drugs, they can delay their first use. Delay of first use from 16 to 24 is absolutely remarkable because it reduces the chances of disorder and improves the chances of recovery. And if you can delay from 12 to 16, you're even better off.
Hey, Doc, I want to ask you about one other issue about this study. You had to go out and effectively publish this study yourself, right?
That's correct.
And you were originally commissioned, not commissioned, but you were part of a group that was doing this study on behalf of the City Club of Portland, right?
That is correct. That is the origins of our committee. The City Club decided that they would not publish this study for internal reasons, and we decided there was enough value in our study that we would publish independently. It is our hope that our study, which is not definitive, will motivate other organizations, including the City Club, to take their own perspective, to do the kind of work we've done, take it one step farther, include everything that's happened in what we know about addiction just in the 4 or 5 months since we stopped reading and started writing, and continue the public discussion that we're having right now that acknowledges this problem and comes up with the 10 or 15 best ways to modify it.
Now, Doc, I feel it's incumbent on me because people might hear that and think, well, if the organization that originally commissioned the study decided not to publish it for internal reasons, they might think, well, maybe the study is flawed or maybe the people doing it didn't do a good job. Doc, it's been reported by my friend Nigel Jaquis, who's a Pulitzer Prize-winning reporter at Willamette Week. The reason they wouldn't publish your study is that all of the people on your panel were with people with white skin?
That is correct.
And what do you think of that? I want to know what you think of that, Doctor. The fact that they say the study is flawed not because the numbers or the data is flawed, but because everybody on the panel had white skin. That seems like an extraordinarily stupid reason to me to refuse to publish a study.
Any group of six people who takes on this kind of enormous problem is going to bring with the group its own particular perspective. And there is no doubt that if you had picked six different people, different races, different economic statuses, people who didn't have a bunch of letters after their name indicating higher education, they would have covered the same material, come up with the same conclusions, and come up with different recommendations based on what they found was most important. And we agree that our perspective is our perspective. What's most important to us isn't that the content be dismissed as it's all white, or that it be dismissed as isn't this comical that the City Club wanted to get more diversity into its committee, but that people look at this study and look at the conclusions, read the study, and say, this problem is important. What do we do next?
Yeah, I look at that, and Doc, I know the city, just like a lot of Northwest cities, is about 80% white. And I know that it's about 20% made up of people of color and other racial minorities or ethnic minorities like Hispanic, which is an ethnic minority rather than a racial minority. But to throw a study out because the six people on the study committee all had white skin, I think is just as stupid as if they threw a study out because all six of the committee members were black or Hispanic or Asian, or if they were all male or all female.
The demographic in Oregon that has the greatest increase in substance use disorder, morbidity, mortality, overdose, disease, early death, are rural, white, middle class, Oregonians.
Wow.
As a matter of fact, that subgroup is the only demographic in the entire United States that's seeing a decrease in life expectancy rather than an increase. It's the only demographic in the entire industrialized world that's seeing a decrease in life expectancy. And the primary causes of this devastation in rural Oregon is substance use disorder, which is provoking liver disease, overdose, addiction, early death. This disease is everywhere, and the ones that are hardest hit aren't even here in Portland. Now, everyone in Portland knows somebody by no more than 2 degrees of separation who is suffering from substance use disorder. So it's not a problem that's restricted by race or language or geography. Everyone needs to acknowledge this is a problem and we need to take action.
Dr. Metz, do you mind mentioning where you've published this so that my audience can see it as well?
Happy to do so. Stateofreform.com is the primary source.
And then under that op-ed, Oregon's addiction crisis is dire but not hopeless. Dr. Metz, I hope you get over the flu soon. I know you've got all the things to do, and I really appreciate you taking the time.
Thank you so much, Lars.
Glad to have you on. Dr. Samuel Metz with us. Back in a moment. He's a retired medical doctor, by the way. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. Pleasure to be with you. Let me go to Ruth in Seattle. Ruth, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Yes, hi. I heard the doctor that you're speaking with about where are all these addictions, where is this addiction epidemic coming from? And I just want to say, you know, I've raised 4 children. I'm a science geek. I've gotten into this issue myself to try to understand. And it comes down to a brain issue. We're institutionalizing our children. And the whole purpose of a good caregiver is to teach an infant self-soothing. It's actually a brain issue. So what happens is the part of the brain that's responsible for people being able to regulate emotion, infants are not developing that. And so what happens is they develop into, teens and pre-adults and end up having to self-soothe.
Well,
so
but hold on, Ruth, I'm curious. The vast majority of people don't turn into drug addicts. Can we agree on that?
Well, and I would say that would be the percentage of people that have a secure attachment, and they did have a good caregiver.
Well, how did they? Well, but so they got it, but everybody else didn't get it. And is that because of the parent? Is it because of school? Is it because of the rest of society or what?
It all comes the first year of life, Lars, and it goes back to I don't think that liberals really want to recognize this issue because they would have to give up their ideas about early childhood daycare and everything else. So you have a good marriage with your wife.
Yes.
Because you got a secure attachment. You got what's called a secure attachment from your mother. So there's two. We either have a secure attachment or we have an insecure attachment.
So how do you fix it? How do you fix it? How do you fix it if a bunch of the people? I know we're up against the clock, so I can't.
Right.
But I'll tell you what, shoot me an email, and I'll be glad to take a look at more information on that. You got the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you live on the Radio Northwest Network. This is the program that serves the entire Pacific Northwest with honestly provocative talk radio. Before I go back to your calls, because there is so much on the plate today. I mean, you got Al Franken and his groping of a young lady who is a former Playboy playmate who's now a radio news anchor in Los Angeles. She says she's been angry about what he did for a decade, and she finally got something to say about it. And Al Franken has now agreed to an ethics probe of him after this groping allegation, which really came back to a photograph that was taken of him at least simulating groping this woman. And with all the other stories like this that are around, you know the kind of reaction that's going to get. So I want to ask you about something else. An awful lot of what is wrong with our society today is the result of lawyers and courts and judges. Okay, I'm not indicting all of them, but I'm saying that lawyers and courts and judges are a problem. You know, when you have judges that make crazy decisions, like yesterday's decision by the Washington Supreme Court on the McCleary decision, where they're effectively, you know, designating how much money should be spent by the state of Washington on the schools. So when I saw this story, and I'll give credit where it's due to Crosscut, which is a very left-wing news organization, and they tell the story of a young lady by the name of Tara Simmons, and it's very sympathetic to Tara Simmons. In simple terms, Tara Simmons is a former drug addict. She has been involved in criminal activity, including drug delivery. She is also a nurse, and she's also a graduate of law school. She has been to prison. She got out of prison about 4 years ago, and she went to law school, and she graduated from law school. And then the Bar Association, which regulates who becomes lawyers and who does not, said, we're not even going to let you take the test. Now, that's the way that Crosscut tells the story that we should feel for this young lady, because she had a tough time growing up. She had a drug addict mom and a drug addict dad, and she began taking drugs very early on. She tasted alcohol when she was 7. She smoked pot when she was 11. She left home when she was 13. In some ways, her whole story is actually an indictment of some of the law schools that educate our lawyers, because she graduated from a law school, even though it sounds like she had had a really lousy education before she got to the point where she could go to school. She did become an RN, and she was off drugs for a few years, and then the story tells that her father died in 2010. As she tried to soothe her sorrows, Simmons once again turned to drugs, says the story in Crosscut. 7 months into her addiction, she found herself stealing again. I love the way liberal reporters write stories as though you just wake up with some stolen goods in your hand and you wonder, where did this come from? Oh, I realize that I just started stealing again. It's not even something you did. She just found herself stealing again. It wasn't long before she ended up in trouble with the law and was sentenced to 30 months, 2.5 years in prison. She was released from the Mission Creek Correction Center for Women in Belfair in 2013, 4 years ago. She couldn't find a job because even though she was an RN, she had a criminal record. And not just an old criminal record, but a recent one. So she found a job at Burger King. And then, frustrated by her continued setbacks, Simmons settled on an ambitious plan. She would go to law school. So you have a convicted criminal who's decided to go to law school to become a lawyer, because after all, they will make somebody who's a lawyer, somebody who's a criminal, into a lawyer. With all the trust that people have to put into lawyers, that somebody who's been a convicted criminal and recently will be allowed to be a lawyer. Well, the Bar Association said, no, we're not going to let her take the test. And now Crosscut is telling this story as though she's being cheated out of this opportunity that she has earned. No, she, I think, has earned the distrust of people because she was on drugs, ruined her life, got off drugs, became a nurse, had a good life. Then the minute she had a stress on her life, her father died, and that's terrible. My father has died. My mother has died. I did not turn into a drug addict. She became a drug addict, and now she would like to be a lawyer despite the fact that she's had considerable problems with the law herself. I know there are probably some people who'd say, well, somebody who's been a criminal, after all, wouldn't that make actually the best kind of lawyer you could find? Somebody who knows what it's like to be on the other side. I disagree, and I applaud the efforts of the Washington State Bar Association to say we are not going to let you become a lawyer, although it sounds like that is under appeal right now. Let's go to, why not? We'll go to the naysayer, Bart. Bart, the truck driver, former nurse, full-time Democrat. How are you, Bart?
Conservative, don't forget that. I mean, you mentioned last time we spoke on the phone, Bart, you're a conservative. You're a conservative.
You are. You're a closet conservative.
I am a conservative. It's just that there's no one that represents me as a conservative in the Republican Party. That's the problem I have.
Okay.
But anyways, I got to get to Al Franken because I seen that photograph. He was making, a bad joke, whatever. The guy's a comic, you know, but we're not actually going to liken that to what has been, you know, 16 women have said that our president groped them, and there's a few of them.
And most of those women, conveniently disappeared the minute the election was over, because their whole point, I think, of some of their complaints was to stop Donald Trump from getting elected, which is why I believe they stopped pursuing their cause immediately after. Let me ask you this. You say it's a joke. You're talking about the picture that he took where he pretends to molest the woman by grabbing or groping her breast, right?
He didn't pretend to molest anyone. He was just making a cup shape of his
hand. Hold on a second. That's not where it stops, though.
Okay,
do you recall that this young lady, who was just a moment ago on CNN telling her story, says that she had agreed to go to Iraq to help entertain the troops and give them a little bit of, you know, a couple of laughs. And she went as part of this group of entertainers. And that Al Franken said, we have to practice the skit we're going to do. The skit apparently involved him kissing her on the mouth. And she says that when she agreed to practice this skit, that the guy stuck his tongue down her throat. Now, do you think that's a minor thing that's just a joke? And do you know any women in your circle of friends who think
anything about that?
Oh, that was part of that's what she wrote about.
I just don't want us to lose focus from the fact that we have a man in the Oval Office who he's got a whole slew of women, and who knows how many of those women he already paid off.
See, why do you keep wanting to change the subject to?
He paid $25 million.
Why do you want to change the subject to Trump? And I'll tell you why. I think it's irrelevant at this point. Just like I think that Roy Moore should drop out of the race in Alabama, because I think his candidacy is problematic based on the admissions he's made. But the people of Alabama ultimately will make that decision. In the case of Trump, the people of the United States made the decision. They heard all of the story.
Hold on.
And that is the system by which we pick presidents, isn't it?
Unfortunately, Bart, by all means,
go out and propose a constitutional amendment, which won't happen, to change the Constitution to get rid of the Electoral College. Go ahead and do it, and then see if you can get 3/5 of the states to sign off on it, which isn't going to happen. But let me get back to Trump. In Trump's case, the American public evaluated him, heard all the dirty stories about him, and said, we're going to make him president anyway, didn't they?
Well, a small percentage of them did. Yeah.
Not a small percentage
didn't vote.
Remember,
at all.
Bart, the small percentage was the people who chose to vote. And that is the system we have, that people are allowed.
Well, you got me there, and man, I got to tell you, I've been complaining about that.
Well, Bart, all the people who didn't vote in the last election could choose to register. It's easy enough to do. They could choose to cast a ballot, and they can choose not to. Would you force them to vote?
Oh, I think, yeah, I don't know if that's a good idea or not.
Well, I do. I know it's a bad idea.
Aptitude testing.
It's a bad idea.
Before you're even allowed to vote.
Well, how would any Democrats get to vote then?
Yeah, exactly. We wouldn't have a Donald Trump.
No, you wouldn't have any Nancy Pelosi's or how about your boy Adam Smith from Bellevue, who wants to let the North Koreans paste us with a nuke before we're allowed to answer? What do you think of that?
That's not my boy.
That's not your boy? He's a Democrat.
I fall in lockstep with the Democrat Party.
Adam Smith. Well, do you like his idea? He's a reliable liberal.
No, I don't.
Okay.
I don't. As a matter of fact.
But your boy Al Franken, you're gonna make
the
excuses.
The only thing I can give Donald Trump, he's kind of crazy the way he does it. But you know, I mean, I think he gets it done. Even more aggressive.
Now tell me this:
with North Korea,
is Al Franken your boy?
I like Al Franken. I think he's done a lot of good things. I think.
Can you name one good thing he's done?
Well, I mean, for one, just listening to him question people on the stand before the Senate is pretty amazing.
Can you name anything he's gotten done in the Congress, even with a Democrat president and a Democrat majority? What did Al Franken get done of any note?
Well, we only had a Democrat majority for 74 days. Remember that now. We had an unprecedented amount of filibusters that went down.
Accomplished something, what has he actually accomplished that you could point to?
I can't think of any of Al Franken's legislation off the top of my head.
Neither can
I've heard him speak.
So he's good at giving speeches.
But you asked me why go to about Donald Trump, and I can answer that for you. Because I will always go to Trump until we no longer have a Russian operative in the White House.
You know, Bart, will you, Bart, hold on. I want to ask you something. Do you know what Fusion GPS is?
What Fusion GPS?
Yeah, you've heard of it.
I do not know what Fusion GPS is.
Okay, Fusion GPS is a firm hired by the DNC and Hillary Clinton. They both paid a total of $12 million to Fusion through a Seattle law firm called Perkins Coie. Do you know what they wanted Fusion to do?
What?
They wanted them to come up with a dossier on Donald Trump that they could use to disparage the candidate for the Republican Party, which they did. It turned out to be mostly fake, but it was interesting fiction. It included Russian prostitutes.
You're talking about the dossier that the guy from MI6
Michael Steele, who was hired by Fusion GPS and paid by Hillary Clinton and the Democrat National Committee. Now, they paid. Now, that firm has ties to the Russian government. You know that, right?
No, I don't.
By the way,
one of Clinton, and you could let her and Trump share a jail cell for all I care.
Well, here's the thing, though, Bart. One last thing, because I'm continuing your education as a Democrat, because you weren't aware of this. The young lady Veselnitskaya, the lawyer who met with Donald Trump Jr. Remember that meeting that you Democrats
love? Yes, I do.
Do you know who she works for?
Yes.
Do you know who she works for?
I don't know who she works for.
She is a lawyer for a Russian company that got itself into trouble over the Magnitsky Act, and she's also has done work for Fusion GPS, which is on the payroll of Hillary Clinton and the DNC. So if you want to tell me about Russian conspiracies on Conspiracy Theory Thursday, deal with Fusion GPS, Perkins Coie of Seattle, and Ms. Veselnitskaya. You're listening to The Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to The Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you on a Conspiracy Theory Thursday. Boy, imagine this conspiracy theory. I just got this story from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. As an undocumented immigrant, Horacio Alvardo thought that if he could show he was the father of a newborn American citizen, he'd be allowed to remain in the United States. But the paternity test ultimately resulted in more severe charges for Alvarado because the mother of the child was only 15 and was his stepdaughter. Criminal complaint has been filed against 32-year-old Alvarado, who now faces three felonies for what investigators say were several years of sustained sexual assaults. He is charged with first-degree sexual assault resulting in pregnancy, repeated sexual assault of a child, and incest. The criminal complaint says the victim came forward last month to report the offenses, which she says began when she was 14 and continued for 4 years. They said that this man apparently believed in the so-called anchor baby myth that having a child born in the United States might protect an illegal alien from deportation. So he raped his stepdaughter. Amazing. Let's go to Spokane. Charles, thanks for listening on KXLY. Welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Well, as far as that last story goes, I'm sorry we don't have public hanging.
So am I.
The reason it would be a good education for the kids.
Well, I think I have no problem with public hanging, and for lesser offenses, I'd like to bring the stocks back to the public square.
Hear. I was thinking also, as a third thing, the whipping post. I've long wished we could do that.
Not sure you'd get away with that under the Constitution, but I think the stocks would work. But anyway, you called in about something else. You heard the Tara Simmons story?
Yeah, and it just an observation. I think that Wes Harden did that, if I'm not mistaken. The Western guy, the gunslinger. Yeah, actually, he was a sheriff as part of his career. But I think he was on both sides of the law. And if I remember correctly, he went to prison and got out and became a
lawyer.
Yeah.
Look, there might even be a difference if there was a greater period of time. But this young lady is 39 years old. She spent, it sounds like, a good part of her life either in prison or drug addicted. And in between, she got some great opportunities to straighten her life around. She became a nurse. That means you could make a good living. She stayed away from drugs for a very short period of time and then went right back to them. And now she wants to, fresh out of 4 years out of prison, she wants the Bar Association to let her become a lawyer. And as a lawyer, an awful lot of things that you do will, I mean, could dramatically affect a person's life. If you miss deadlines, if you decide to cheat the system, if you're not entirely honest. And I would be concerned about what would happen if she became a lawyer.
Is she do you happen to know what party she's a member of?
I would have to guess that she's probably from Hillary Clinton's party. Just at a guess.
I was thinking if she is, there wouldn't be much difference then between all the rest of them on that side.
No, there probably wouldn't. I mean, think about it. Hillary was a lawyer, and she wasn't exactly the most ethical person in the world. Her husband was a lawyer. He wasn't the most ethical person in the world. Webb Hubble, who I've always thought was probably Chelsea Clinton's dad, he was the most ethical guy in the world. So I think you're right. Charles, I appreciate the call. Thanks a lot for listening in Spokane on KXLY. Glad to have you with me live on the Radio Northwest Network. Your calls are welcome at 866-439-5277. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. We covered things from all over the Pacific Northwest, and I wanted to mention this one because I was kind of hoping to get the principal of Staten High School on from the San Diem School District, and he turned me down. He said he wasn't interested in coming on, but I got an email from a parent who wrote to me and said, Lars, this came up on a community page that I'm part of, and I thought you'd like to talk about it on the radio, maybe even contact the school for clarification. Yesterday, and I think this was a couple of days ago, some of the boys were embarrassed that a female transgender student was allowed to use the boys' restroom. They were using the urinals when she walked in, and she refused to leave. It was awkward for the boys. My understanding from the school is she has that right. I disagreed. I thought, along with others, that maybe the school could have a restroom designated for transgenders so the boys would not be embarrassed with their pants down in the boys' restrooms. Well, it turns out the school did respond that while the principal is not willing to talk to me, they have told the transgender student to start using a faculty bathroom until they figure out an alternative. But, you know, with all this concern, and it's appropriate concern about Judge Roy Moore, about Harvey Weinstein, about Kevin Spacey, about Al Franken, when you talk about what is right and what is appropriate and about privacy and boundaries. And then you tell kids in school, there aren't any boundaries. If a young lady who insists she's a young man insists on using the bathroom, that's it. You just have to do it. And it doesn't matter if it bothers you and makes you uncomfortable. And yet in other occasions, we're told that if you make somebody feel uncomfortable, you're the wrongdoer. But we have two standards, don't we? Let's go to Naysayer Tony. Hey, Tony, welcome to the program. What's on your mind today?
Hey, Lars, I got a question for you about that gal that flipped off Trump.
No, the young lady who got fired because there was a picture of her flipping off the Trump motorcade, and she got let go by her company because her company is a government contractor, and they didn't think having one of their employees with a picture flipping off the president was the best thing to do, and I agreed with him. What would you like to know?
Was she on the job when she did the I'm not agreeing with the act.
No, I know. I get it. And I think I know where you're going. No, she was not on the job. She was apparently on the way to work, and it doesn't make any difference, does it?
Well, other than her employer stepping in because she's on her own time.
Tony,
and
there are a lot of things. Yeah. Do you mind saying what field of work you're in?
I'm a driver, truck driver.
Okay, you're a truck driver. Now,
yeah.
Are there things you could do off the job, entirely off the job, that would have an impact on whether you stay at your job?
Well, I wouldn't hope not.
Well, hold on a second, Tony. You're a truck driver.
Now, you have a legal act or illegal act? And now that's not really my point. We're kind of getting off track.
Okay.
Here.
All right, tell me where we're going.
What I wanted to call you out on was the coach in Washington.
Yeah.
You think that he,
Joe Kennedy.
School district was
You're talking
in the
about
wrong.
Joe Kennedy, who chose. Yes, I do think they were wrong.
Well,
would
now,
you like to
minute.
Know that? Would you
How
like to know the difference?
One instance it can be right, I'll and then the you. Other instance it can be wrong. He was on the job.
I got to tell you how you can be wrong. I'm going to tell you. You wanted to know. Did you call for an answer or just to yell at me?
No, I'm
okay.
I'm,
you asked the question.
I'll tell you.
I'll tell you how it can be different. Okay. A private company can, within certain limitations, fire you for just about anything. Washington and Oregon are employment at will states. So if you walk in and the boss says, Tony, I don't like the way you're parting your hair, you're fired. He can fire you. He can't fire you for having white skin or black skin. He can't fire you for being male or female. He can't fire you for because you go to a church and he goes to a mosque. But he can fire you for just about anything. That's the private sector. A school is different than your employer because a school is a government agency. People forget that, but it is a government agency. Now, the government is not allowed to fire you, or the government is not allowed to impede your free speech, your practice of religion, things like that. Unless you put lives at risk, they can't do that. So when the government agency that is a school district said to this coach who walked to the 50-yard line on his own at the end of the football game, after the game had ended, he walked over to the line and he said a prayer. Okay?
He's still representing the school.
Well, I would say he wasn't. The game was over.
He's the coach.
Well, hold on.
He represents the school 24/7, Lord.
I disagree with you.
Oh.
Well, I think, hold on. I'll agree with you that there are certain jobs in which we say you are effectively that person 24 hours a day. Governor of Washington is a good example. You are the governor 24 hours a day. If you're the president, you're the president 24 hours a day. If you're a cop,
I'm a truck driver 24 hours a day.
Well,
I can't
no, you're not.
A lot of people can do.
No, you're not.
I can't go out and smoke weed, Lord. I know.
And that was the example.
I'm a truck driver.
That was the example I was going to give you. That if you smoke weed off the job, and then they ask you to urinate in a cup, you're probably going to lose your CDL and lose your job. I get that.
Right. I'm still a truck driver.
But 24/7. Here's the difference. If you, as a truck driver, decide to sound off about Donald Trump or sound off about something political and the boss doesn't like it, he can fire you for that.
Absolutely.
The government cannot.
I'm not pro-union, but I think unions have a place.
Tony,
I know you disagree with unions. I know you do.
Well, hold on. See, people get me wrong on unions. Here's what I think about unions. I think unions engage in extortion, which I think is shameful behavior. I think unions hurt their own members to benefit the union bosses many times, and I think that's sad. I think unions tell every worker that all of you are worth exactly the same amount of money, Tony, even though I'm willing to bet that there are people you work with who are really good truck drivers and better than you. I'll bet there are drivers you work with that aren't as good as you, but all of you in a union environment will get paid the same amount of money after a certain number of years. And I think that's a foolish way to agree to be part of a club that says, I'm a $15 driver, that guy's a $12 driver, somebody else is a $17 driver, but we're all going to take exactly the same paycheck because we're part of a union. I think that's foolish.
I don't agree with everything that the union stands for, but I do agree with unions standing behind some employees that get terminated for wrong reasons.
Can you give me an example? Since we're talking about it today and the audience may not know, you give me an example of a wrongful reason that you would get terminated for that the union would stand up for you. Give me a good one.
Oh, for me?
Yeah.
Oh, say I smoked weed on the job. I had a dirty UA.
Okay.
They'd probably go to bat for you.
Do you think they should?
It depends.
Well, no, let me make the argument, Tony. Yeah. Let me make the argument against it. Because, I don't think anybody can give me a good example where you'd get fired for it, but the union would go to bat for you, and it would make sense that they'd go to bat for you. Because then the union is spending the union's money, which is contributed by all the workers, to defend a wrongful action by the worker. Now, why in the world?
Okay, here's my point. That gal that flipped off Trump had nothing to do with her employer.
Sure she did.
So a union, and I would back that 100%, that gal should have never lost her job.
Her boss, do you know what her company did? What the business
I
was
don't care.
No, it matters.
Matter.
It matters.
No, it does not. She was off the job, Lars.
It doesn't matter.
On the job.
Well, you just admitted that you can do things off the job that will affect your employment on the job, right? Right.
Absolutely, but she was off the job.
No, but hold on, Tony.
Nobody,
you just admitted, Tony. You just
knew that she
don't talk over me, Tony. You just admitted to me that things you do off the job could affect your own. For example, let's say you go off the job and you take your car, whatever your personal car is, and you've got a hot car and it'll go fast, and you find a big empty stretch of road somewhere, maybe coming off the pass on I-90, and you're on your way down the hill and you're thinking, I'm going to see if I can top 120 miles an hour. So you do, and you get a ticket for reckless driving. Is that likely to have an effect on your employment?
Absolutely.
Okay, because you got a traffic ticket. That's all you got. A traffic ticket on your own time, on your own dime, in your own car, and you were off the job, and your boss will probably fire you because it'll not only affect your ability to be a commercial driver, it'll probably affect his insurance rates as well. So I think that young lady who flipped off the president of the United States and her employer is a contractor that works for the government is a really bad thing to do. And she deserved to get fired. And since it's employment at will, she can get fired. And you're listening to The Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to The Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you. Don't forget, every Friday, we celebrate First Amendment Friday on this program. I'll actually be in studio tomorrow for a change. Seems like that's the first time in about a month that I've been able to do First Amendment Friday from the studio. I'm not complaining. I like going to Washington, D.C. last week. It's just that there are times where the travel gets to you after a while. It starts to wear on you a bit. David Cross joins me now for his weekly criminal illegal alien report. You know, David, I was just sharing with the folks in the program about a story from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel about an illegal alien who committed the rape of his stepdaughter, who was an underage girl, because he thought that if he could make her pregnant at 14, that he could stop his deportation from America. Guy's in his 30s, and they have now charged him with the appropriate crimes in that case. But he actually apparently told the police, yeah, I thought if I could make a baby, that it would keep me from being sent back to Mexico.
That's one sick individual, Lars.
Yeah, it is.
It's interesting. You know, you look at this all across the country. This week in Oregon, I did the Oregon Department of Corrections criminal alien sex crime report, and there were 470 criminal aliens in the Oregon Department of Corrections prison system for sex crimes. That's sex abuse, rape, and sodomy. And the majority of them were from counties like Marion County, Washington County, and Multnomah County. And almost 67% of them were from those three counties. And there's a coincidence, Lars. In Marion County, three cities, Salem, Woodburn, declared themselves sanctuary cities. Mm-hmm. And, of course, you know, Multnomah County, Portland declared itself a sanctuary city. And in Washington County, Beaverton, Forest Grove, and Hillsborough did. They all have the most sex crimes in of any of Oregon's 36 counties. And they're just unwilling to cooperate with the federal government and enforce their immigration laws. Lars, did you see that letter the Justice Department sent to 29 jurisdictions in the country, in particular King County, Washington, and the city of Seattle, and the state of Oregon, and Multnomah County, requesting cooperation by December 8th of this year?
I did.
And isn't that crazy that you have all these jurisdictions unwilling to protect their citizens from criminal aliens, sex criminals, just like you mentioned?
No, and it's amazing because for all the concern about the Harvey Weinsteins of the world and the Kevin Spaceys and now the Al Frankens of the world, that the much more proximate threat is right here in our communities. And as you point out, Marion County, 132 criminal alien sexual predators, Washington County, 114, Multnomah County, 73 of them, and 67.87% of the aliens sent to serve time for sexual crimes in Department of Corrections prisons. David, thanks a lot. I appreciate the update. Let's go to Steve, who's a naysayer. Steve, we love naysayers on the program. What's on your mind? Hello, Steve. Steve has decided not to be well. We'll do a different Steve.
Hello?
We got a couple of Steve naysayers. So, Steve, you're a different naysayer from a different town. Apparently, a lot of people named Steve disagree with me today. What's on your mind?
Can you hear me?
I can hear you fine. What's on your mind, sir?
Okay. Here's what's on my mind. I heard you talking about how the public voted for Donald Trump, even though these people were saying all this stuff, because the public is capable of making up their own minds.
I believe they are.
So why can't this woman become a lawyer and just have full disclosure? Any client comes in to see her, she just tells them, I'm a felon, I did this, I did that, and let them decide. Why does the bar get to decide who can do what?
There's a reason for that. You have standards that you uphold about who becomes a lawyer, and you say that certain people, if you've committed crimes, certain crimes, you can't become a lawyer unless the Bar Association agrees to give you a waiver of some kind. I mean, Oregon has had this debate. Now it's Washington's that's having this debate. And the reason is you want to protect people from the kinds of people who commit those crimes, because the best way to predict the future about somebody's behavior is to take a look at their behavior in the past. And you know that's true. In your own life, you see that, right?
Well, what I see is I think people should be able to make up their own mind, and an agency shouldn't get to decide who can do what.
So, in other words, should a company be able to decide to employ a truck driver who's been a drug addict and make up their own mind about who they want to employ? Because we don't allow that. We have standards for truck drivers.
I'm talking about if somebody goes to see her and she's a lawyer and she does full disclosure, okay, this is my past. It's up to you if you want to work with me. Isn't that their choice? Why does the bar get to decide?
Well, because we've given the licensing up to the bar. We've allowed the bar to be effectively the licensing agency and to say who gets to take the bar exam and who does not. So there's state law that said the bar is in charge of deciding who can become and who can't. And they get to decide on things like matters of moral turpitude. I mean, there was a guy not a few years ago who was involved in blowing up what they thought was an empty lab building, except somebody died during it. It was during the Vietnam War protests. And there was a question about whether or not blowing up a building that ended up causing the death of somebody was an act of moral turpitude or not, and the Bar Association made that decision rather than, I guess, trying to explain all of that to every prospective client who comes in. You've got the Lars Larson.